fishing. I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said, fish, 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 fishing.
Well, how you doing today, folks? You don't have Fishing Frank here, obviously, but you're listening to the Fishing Whatever Frank's radio show.
The Fishing Whatever Frank's radio show. Is that an official title, sir?
He changes the name all the time, so I really have no idea where to go with it. I just roll with it. So we have, obviously, Josh Olive in the guest seat.
Hey, Captain Josh Olive.
Really?
Well, yeah.
Titles, please.
Come on.
Title.
We're going to be formal.
Okay. Captain Josh Olive.
Thank you.
And then we have RJ, the man of many hats. If we had to mention all of his titles, the show would be over. You know, it's a long list.
Yeah, I'll go with Village Idiot for today.
Okay.
Good as any.
Sounds perfect. So, me, I've got a cold. So it's going to be fighting coughs and everything else.
Yeah, so if you hear anybody hacking up a lung, like maybe just right now in the background there, it's just Robert. Don't worry about it. He's going to survive. It's just going to be slightly interruptive of the show, although I'll try to talk over it and say nothing at the same time.
Yeah, you're good at that. So, you know, this weekend is Memorial Day weekend, which is... What would be the title for that? Amateur weekend most of the time?
No, there's a much better word. They use it in the Army. It starts with CL and ends with CK, and we can't say it on the radio.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good weekend to stay off the water.
Well, pros and cons to it. You know, the biggest thing is you better have your patience ready.
All of it.
And you can't be expecting to pull up to the boat ramp and just dump your boat in and leave, or pull your boat out and leave, or even find a parking spot for that matter. You know, it's supposed to be a beautiful weekend, according to the weatherman. You know, so...
That'll make it worse out there.
Depending on your place of preference for fishing at, you know, you have to get to that boat ramp super early to get a parking spot.
So... Like Robert said, it's amateur hour out there. This is the time when people who never take their boats out are going to be taking their boats out because, hey, it's the holiday weekend. Why not? So they got off of work. So those folks do not have a routine down. They are not the people who pull up, back the boat in, pull up, park the truck, and they're gone. That's not how this works for them. These are the folks who get into place and then want to put the plug in, and then load up all the fishing tackle into the boat, and then get up there and check everything, and then turn on the motor and realize that it's not turning over, and then sit there and try to figure out why it's not turning over while taking up space in the launch. So you're just going to have to deal with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of that pretty much sums it up. I mean, probably one of the best things about boat ramps on holiday weekends is getting a lounge chair and sitting back and watching.
And that would be the only way you're going to get me down there.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, pick and choose wisely what you're going to do, where you're going to do it, timely manner, you know. And, you know, obviously the FWC is going to be out in full force, so make sure you have all your safety equipment and fishing licenses ready to go, because good chance you're going to be checked by somebody.
Let's hope, anyway.
Yeah. You know, so, but it's, biggest thing is go out and enjoy yourself and just experiment with some different stuff. I mean, you know, right now we got tarpon are probably one of the biggest things going on, and we're coming off of that hill tide with the spawn. So under normal situations when we have this go on, you know, for the last week we've had nothing but tarpon only pretty much exclusively in the pass. But now that it's over, we should start to really see those fish branch off again and maybe even see some pods along the beaches and inside the harbor a little bit, you know, so you got a lot of options there with that.
Which is great, because as we've talked about before, fishing for tarpon in Boca Grande Pass, man, it's not my favorite thing to do. It's awesome to see those fish in there, but if you want to actually catch fish, rather than get into fights with everybody else, it's much better to go fishing someplace else. And it's been hard to do when those fish are concentrated heavily in the pass. But now, like you said, with the pattern we expect to see, they'll be moving out all over the place. They'll be scattering into all of the places where we would expect to see them, from the 41 bridges all the way down into Pine Island Sound and out on the beaches as far north and south as you really want to go.
Right. You know, and the other thing that's going on right now, besides the tarpon acting up a little bit, is the crabs. You know, finding crabs for bait, you know, has been a very, very tough one to do on the entire west coast of Florida, for that matter.
Yeah. Did we get much of a crab flush with the hill tide? I didn't.
A couple places flushed really, really good. Captiva had a real good flush. Gasparilla had a good flush. Boca had a couple good flushes, but it seemed like it was a decent one.
Okay. Now, the trick with those crabs is that you're mostly dealing with two different species that are flushing on those tides. There's an iridescent swimming crab, which is what most people will call a pass crab, and then there's a blotched crab, which most people call a red crab. Neither one of those is the same as a blue crab, even though they're the same size, shape, but they don't live like a blue crab when you try to put them into bait tanks. They're much more fragile, much more delicate animals. So when you're buying crabs at the bait shops, a lot of those folks are looking for blue crabs to sell you. And harvesting little blue crabs is not the easiest thing. It's not like you can go out and dip up 1,000 of them on a crab flush.
Right. You know, basically the crabs you're talking about are very similar to white bait. You know, they need constant water flow, you know, to deal with to keep them alive. So it is tricky, but the blue crabs, the way they're caught is a couple of ways. One, licensing is pretty tricky in order to catch them and sell them. But, you know, you've got some of your shrimpers catch them as bycatch in some of their areas. But then you've got the guys who go out and legally collect them using a headlamp, a long-handled net, and a lot of wading through some of the creeks and swamps where a lot of those juvenile blue crabs grow up.
Right. So quick question for you guys. Yeah. If you're listening out there, how much do you want to get paid per hour to go out and wander around in the backwaters of Charlotte Harbor, wading through the water with all those little bull sharks and whatever else might be in the water to go out there and catch blue crabs? Will you do it for $10 an hour? Will you do it for 20? Personally, I'm looking at 50, you know, if that's going to be my gig. So when they sell those little crabs, yeah, they get good money for them. But yeah, that's why.
Yeah, most places are anywhere from $35 to $45 a dozen, and finding them right now from Tampa down to Marco Island been a pretty daunting task.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, the best thing you do is call your tackle shops and see who's got them, but it has been a little on the tough side to find those crabs.
Now, what do you think about using an artificial crab for tarpon?
It works in some instances, but not as well as you would think it would. You know, I mean, I've got guys who have used gulp crab over the years. There's been several hard crab impersonations over the years. You know, Savage Gear makes a soft crab. Weston makes a hard crab. And they both look pretty good, but the Weston, jury's still out on how well those are going to work. The Savage crab's been out for a little bit. Not a lot of progress on it.
Yeah.
You know, it's... it's not that easy, unfortunately.
The few people I've talked to who have said they've had some success with the Savage crab are not using it the way that it comes rigged out of the package. They're just taking the replacement bodies, and they're hooking them basically the same way that you would hook a blue crab regularly, around the back leg area and up through the top of the shell. Whereas if you look at the way that crab is rigged out of the package, it's rigged weighted so that it sits butt down on the sand. That's what it's meant to do, is sit down on the sand and hold its claws upwards. So if you're rigging it that way for tarpon, it's not moving quite the way they expect to see them move.
Yeah, it's not definitely the natural way of when they're drifting in and out of the pass.
Not at all. So what do you got for alternatives besides crabs?
Honestly, I mean, I would probably be throwing shrimp if I could find shrimp that are, say, 3.5-4 inches or longer. They don't have to be jumbos, which are very hard to find this time of year anyway. But, you know, a select shrimp would work fine for me. You know, I'd even go out and try to do some squirrel fish, small pinfish, kind of change things up and experiment around a little bit and see what's going to happen.
Yeah, because you know the thing about a tarpon is we have this idea of what a tarpon's going to feed on, but a tarpon I don't think is nearly as set on those things as we get set on those things. I think tarpon feed much more opportunistically than most anglers would realize. So I'd say if everybody else is out there, and especially when we're having a hard time getting crabs, but if everybody else is out there trying to throw crabs or shrimp at them, give them something different, something weird. You know, offer them a butterfish or, you know, a skipjack or something like that, something different. One of those pieces of quote-unquote trash bait that a lot of people don't ever even think about a second time. Even a little catfish, you know, give them something like that, and those fish definitely eat them. So I think that giving them the chance might just result in a hookup.
What kind of suggestions do you have, RJ?
What I know about tarpon, Latin name is Megalops atlanticus, and it means big cheeks. And they're sight feeders, but they're also very sensitive to vibration. And those big cheeks, when their mouth is open, picks up, it's like a reverse megaphone. They're picking up all these vibrations around them. And one of the reasons I've always thought the artificial crab didn't work is it doesn't make any vibration, where a live crab is constantly moving its legs and its gills and things like that. So, you know, I go with you on the shrimp. Shrimp works for just about every species of fish that you'd want to go for out there. So if you can't get anything else, at least try the shrimp. And I found ladyfish work real well with tarpon, so at least from my end of the spectrum.
Hey, you know, you have nothing better to do. Why don't you invent us a mechanical crab bait that has vibrating legs?
Well, you know, they've talked about this over the years. You know, when you talk to the guys that fish regularly in Boca Grande, they've talked about things that light up, things that vibrate. You know, it's something that wind up and it vibrate and light up at the same time. But I've never seen anybody come up with anything that does that.
Hey, wide open opportunity right here.
Yep, you're listening. Give it a shot. See what happens.
It's probably because electricity and water are not a very good combination.
Well, you remember that lure I brought in where you yank on it and the line comes out and has a little wind-up motor on the inside and the tail flaps?
Yeah.
Might be something like that might work.
That might definitely have some possibilities.
Now, on the other hand, you could just ditch the tarpon entirely and go fish for some Spanish mackerel.
Right, and the Spanish mackerel have been pretty darn good lately, you know, from Cape Hayes out to basically 10, 15 miles, and then up and down the ICW, you know, Lemon Bay and Pine Island area. I've been getting several good reports from gentlemen lately. Earlier today, a guy said he caught several that he would have sworn were Cerro mackerel, you know, 23, 24-inch long fish. He said they're pretty chunky, and he didn't have a picture, of course, but
naturally.
You know, he caught those up in Lemon Bay, and another guy's been catching some down in Pine Island Sound in the high 20s, you know, low to high 20s. You know, it's definitely a good time right now to go look for those, because a lot of that, we've had some fairly strong tides, obviously, but there's been a fairly consistent breeze off and on from the west, southwest, and it's stirred up the beach just a little bit, so a lot of those bait fish that were out along the beach have actually moved inside the ICW. So you've got those Spanish mackerel following them right in and chasing them all over the place.
Yeah, and it's been all the usual activity that you expect to see out there with the birds going crazy and diving down and the fish underneath them. It's just the whole experience of it is pretty cool, just to be in the midst of all that predatory activity going on. And then, of course, your net result is delicious Spanish mackerel, which I feel are one of the more underrated local table fish.
Oh, absolutely. You know, with all the weird closures on several of the desired species, you know, having another option of something to go out and target that is both fun, doesn't require really any special gear for, and is edible all at the same time, it's kind of tough to beat.
Yeah.
And they don't beat you up nearly bad as tarpon will.
Right.
Depends on the tackle you choose to use.
That's true.
If you want to go with that ultralight and that 2-pound line, boy, they can get you pretty good.
Sounds like you and Frank. You know, they love and enjoy that light tackle stuff, but no, I'm just sticking with what I've already got.
Fine.
Makes it a lot easier.
Be that way.
You know, the great thing about Spanish mackerel, too, is like if, you know, this is normally a family type weekend where a lot of people are getting out, both camping, boating, whatever, this is a perfect way to introduce one of your children who's new to angling.
Or grandchildren.
Or grandchildren.
Or great grandchildren.
You know, this is by far one of the best species to kind of start somebody off with, because the action can be fairly nonstop, but you can do it on live bait or artificials. You've got a lot of different options to make it much more enjoyable, and you can troll for them, you can drift for them. I mean, there's multiple ways to go about it, but you've got a lot of species to choose from.
Yeah, and if you're a shrimp fisherman, Spanish mackerel are more than happy to eat shrimp, so they make it as easy as you want it to be. Now, the thing about Spanish is that a lot of people have eaten mackerel over the years and said, no, they're oily, no, they're nasty, no, they taste like cat food, and that can be very true if you're not treating those fish right. So if you want your Spanish mackerel to be tasty, here are some basic rules that you need to follow. Rule number one, as soon as your fish comes into the boat, get it into the cooler. Inside that cooler, you should have not just ice, but a mixture of slushy brine. So what you're going to do is, for a bag of ice, you're going to dip her up about a gallon or so of salt water, and you're going to dump that right into the cooler, and you're going to make this real nice wet slush that when you put your fish in there, you can. It's basically like putting him into water, but you're putting him into super cooled water. So it kills him quick, and it kills him by hypothermia, which is going to pull most of the blood, which is where that nasty fishy flavor is, out of the meat and into the internal organs. So when you go to clean your fish, you're going to notice that they're a lot whiter than you might have been expecting if you've had Spanish mackerel that haven't been properly iced like that. Rule number two is you need to eat your Spanish mackerel fresh the day you catch it or the day after you catch it. If it has to go longer than 2 days, then you either need to share your Spanish mackerel with other people before it's been 2 days, or you need to fire up the smoker. But if you're going to eat that fish fresh in the first couple days, it's absolutely fantastic. The way that we do it at my house is we bake it. You can also put it on the grill. It's not a great frying fish, but baked, smeared with a little bit of Duke's mayonnaise, and whatever seasonings you like. I just use a regular crab boil type seasoning and put it in the oven, and it's wonderful. It's delicious. It's fantastic.
What about you, RJ?
I like putting them on the grill. I like putting them on the grill and just make a butter sauce. So butter, Duke's mayonnaise, a little bit of salt, and I like to put curry on them. And I think that's a great taste, and that's a great fish for this weekend. Have people over to barbecue. Go out, catch a bunch of Spanish mackerel. Do exactly like you say. You got to chill them down really fast, and you got to eat them the same day. And you'll be amazed at how wonderful they taste. And there's a bunch of good recipes out there. And I think the big thing with the mackerel is what type of sauce are you going to put on the top of it? You know, that really adds to the flavor of the fish.
Yeah, and the other cool thing about mackerel is if you're used to trying to clean fish like sheep's head when you have a whole mess of them and you got to work around all those bones, mackerel are a joy to clean. You literally just zip the fillets off both sides, and I take the bloodline out of the middle where you have all those little pin bones, and that's it. You know, you can clean a Spanish mackerel in a minute and a half.
And if you're going to keep them on the grill, if you're going to do them on the grill, keep the skin on them, put the skin side down.
Yeah.
Right. And why is that?
Well, it'll flake out and go right through the top of the grill if you do it otherwise. And it also will dry out really fast.
Right.
And the skin's very edible. They do have scales, but they're really tiny. You're not even going to notice that there's scales there. So.
Well, and a lot of people don't realize, you know, obviously the skin is edible, but there's also that thin layer of fat that exists between that skin and the meat.
Right.
And sometimes that can be a huge difference in the flavor. I mean, for me, you know, I'm not a big fish eater, but mangrove snapper is pretty darn good. But I like mangrove snapper better with the skin on it. You know, Spanish mackerel, even when I've baked it in the oven, I prefer it with the skin on it than with it off. It just a little bit more flavor to it, so it's just kind of nice. But it's kind of personal preference more than anything else.
Yeah, but the key to it is the preparation. You know, if you don't do that right, you can do everything else right, and it's not going to be good.
Right.
So, and if you do get the prep right, and you screw up the recipe a little bit, hey, you know what? It's probably still going to be pretty tasty.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and they're such a fun fish to catch. I mean, simple spoon.
Anything silver.
Yeah.
When they're in that predatory mode where they're hitting bait fish and boiling all over the place, anything silver you throw at them, they're going to eat.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's pretty basic. You don't need fancy gear. You need a little bit of steel leader. If you are going to troll for them, you definitely want to use a ball-bearing swivel of some kind. If you're just going to cast and reel, you know, those gotcha jerk jiggers are one of my most favorite, which is just a little steel tube with treble hooks on it or a single hook on it, and those work amazingly well. But there's a lot of people that catch them on shrimp under a float. Just cast it out there in that open water and let it drift around or pop it once in a while.
One of my favorite lures for them is a pompano jig, that silly style jig.
Yeah.
Instead of fishing it like you would for pompano where you pop it along, this is just a cast and retrieve, cast and retrieve. Or you can even troll it. But, you know, mackerel do have teeth, and I don't like using wire because it really cuts down on your strikes. But if you drop down to, let's say, 40 to 60-pound fluorocarbon, you get a lot more hits, but you're still going to lose some fish because they try to steal the lure out of each other's mouths. So spoons, they work great, but I don't like losing spoons because even a cheap spoon is going to cost me $3. So with those little pompano jigs, I'm down to a dollar that I've lost, sometimes less, depends on the size of packs you can buy. So I really like those a lot for mackerel fishing because I don't mind losing them.
Right.
No, I don't have to cuss.
Definitely an easier pill to swallow. You know, and, you know, something else that's going on out there, too, that has really increased. It's been going on for a little bit, but it's gotten a little bit better these last several days. With those Spanish mackerels, you got a lot of small sharks swimming around out there. You know, and when I'm talking about small sharks, we're talking like 2 to 4 footers. You know, and if you want to talk about table fare, most of these fish are of the eating size and the right species, because there's quite a few of them that are protected here or have size limits on them. And one of the most common ones that we do have around here right now is, like, you got your bonnet heads, but your black nose Atlantic sharp nose and even your black tips, they're all cooperating very, very well out there right now. And a lot of times they're around those same areas where the Spanish mackerel are at.
It's shaping up to be a real sharky year. This has been one of those seasons where I'm getting a lot of people complaining when they're out there reef fishing or they're fishing for Spanish mackerel that they're losing a bunch of fish to sharks. And I always give them the same advice. You know, if the sharks are eating your fish, then maybe switch over and try fishing for sharks. Don't you think, RJ?
That's what I would do. And shark are fun to catch. I mean, it's a battle. It's an interesting animal to see in the water as you bring them up to the boat, and they're good eating.
And when you talk about taking your kids or your grandkids fishing, there's no better story for them to go back to school with than the story about how they caught a shark.
That's, you know, right.
Their classmates do not care one tiny little bit about the Spanish mackerel that they caught or the snook or the redfish or whatever. But when they go back and they say, I went fishing with Grandpa, and I caught a shark.
And they now got a picture there's a story. Of the kid with the shark.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, shark handling at the boat, that's a different trip than dealing with a snook.
Slightly.
Yeah, a whole lot different.
So what do you guys recommend? You brought this small shark up, and I'm saying small, you know, 2-3 feet long. You can do a fine job on your hand or your arm if you get it in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, for me personally, first of all, am I going to keep it? Am I going to keep it for dinner? You know, if I'm going to do that, then the fish is going to come aboard at some point or another. You know, so, you know, I'll go into the easy part of it. I'll let Josh explain the other part of it. But the for me personally, I very rarely keep a shark. So when I am shark fishing, period, I usually flatten out the barb a little bit on all of my hooks because it's easier to remove the hook. Plus, it can be pretty nonstop action because it can get pretty aggressive and be pretty good numbers. So if I'm not going to keep them, I get them up boat side and I try to pop the hook out with my good D-hooker, or I simply lean over as far as I possibly can that I feel comfortable with not losing my appendage but also not leaving the shark with too long of a leash, and just cutting the leader and let him swim off. You know, the barb is flattened out, so he'll be able to work that hook out a little bit faster than if it had a barb in it. And the animal never had to come into the boat, so usually swims away a lot more healthy and happy.
Yeah, and I could not agree more with you on that as a general rule. But since I brought up the idea of the kids and the grandkids and that photo with the fish. So you've got to get the photo somehow because the kid's obviously going to have proof. So if you've got a shark that's, let's say, in that 2 to 3 foot range, like RJ was saying, then that fish is usually fairly easy to handle. When you do it, you need to not be scared of the fish, but you need to show respect. Sharks are extremely strong for their size, way stronger than you're probably expecting if you've never handled one before. So the trick to it is to get him behind the head in the gill area, but not so that you're digging into his gills. You don't want to hurt this fish. I mean, you're just going to get him up for a photo and then get him back into the water. So grabbing them behind the head in the area of the gills without digging your fingers into the gills themselves is the key. Once you have that fish grabbed that way, you're going to also want to hold on to the tail if you can, because that's where they're going to get you. That tail's going to swing around and slap you good. So a two-handed grip, and don't let the kid hold the fish. Get the kid in the photo with the fish. It's just not safe. I see these things all the time as the publisher of Waterline with kids holding sharks, and it amazes me that more kids aren't bitten, because I've seen probably 24 photos in the past year of a kid, let's say 8 years or under, holding up a shark by the tail. And that's ridiculous to do. I mean, those sharks with as bendy as they are, they can just swing right around and grab a hold. And once they get a hold, they're not usually really inclined to let go.
Yeah, people don't realize it, but sharks can bite their own tail. I mean, that's very normal. So that's one of the wrong ways to handle them.
Yeah.
You know, grabbing them on the top of the head. You know, usually what happens is you swing them into the boat and wet down the deck of the boat if you're planning on letting this fish go. Wet down the deck of the boat first, then get it into the boat. Let it go nuts for a minute. When its belly is finally sitting on the ground and it stopped flopping, that's when you come down and grab them on top of the head, just behind the gills or in front of the gills.
Now, you're going to want to make sure that when you get a hold of that fish, like I said, you can't be afraid about doing this. You've got to grab it, and you've got to grab it like you mean it. If you've ever dealt with nettle plants up north, it's kind of the same thing. If you are too cautious about it, then, yeah, you're in danger. The fish is going to pick up on that, and it's going to react to it. So instead, you got to grab a hold like you mean it. That's how you avoid getting bit.
Right. And you pin them down to the deck of the boat. Once you grabbed them, you're going to hold them firm against the deck of the boat. He's going to thrash around a little bit, and that's fine, but make sure you got your good grip. And then you grab on top of the base of the tail and around the base of the tail, and you point the fish out off towards the side of the boat for your photograph. That way, if it starts to really thrash around in any way where you don't feel comfortable with it or you start to lose your grip, you can just push it to where it's going to fly over the side of the boat and swim off.
Now, we recently had an opportunity to take a picture of somebody with a shark, and the shark was a little bit too big to bring into the boat. It was about 4 to 4.5 feet long. If you're looking at this shark that you've just caught in its boat side, and you're thinking, I don't really want to get that thing into the boat. It's just a little bit bigger than I think I'm comfortable with. That's A-okay, not a problem. It's easy enough to take the photo with whoever caught the fish, squatting down or leaning over the gunwale, and the fish still there in the water. It can make a really impressive photo. The lower down you get as the photographer, the better the photo is going to be. So if you, as the photographer, are willing to lean over the side of the boat too, you can really get a nice shot.
All right. And then you just cut the leader or try to pop the hook
loose? Yep. If you can't pop the hook immediately, cut the leader as close as you can to the fish and be gone with it. You know, a nice long pair of wire cutters is a great thing to have there. Please do not try to cut shark leaders with, you know, a little stubby pair.
Why not?
Then
you come back with a little stubby yourself.
Yeah. And this opposable thumb, I need it for later.
That's right. And that goes to the idea of using a boga grip on a shark. It puts your hand a little too close to the working end of the shark's mouth, I think. And I've heard that debate either way. It's an easier way to grab the animal, but it's an easier way for the animal to grab you also.
Absolutely.
So don't think that you're going to go shark fishing with a boga grip, because it's probably not going to work for you.
No, it's definitely not. Now, let's say somebody decides to keep one of these sharks, you know, that the best thing you can do is treat them very, very similar to the Spanish mackerel.
With one exception.
Yep.
You got to get that shark gutted now. It can't wait.
As soon as you feel most comfortable, you know, it should still be obviously, I mean, the best scenario is that it's alive, kicking and everything else when you go to unzip it. But if you don't feel comfortable at first, which everyone has their beginning moments where if you don't feel uncomfortable for that first time handling or trying to gut a shark, there's something wrong with you, you know. So you should have that respect.
Absolutely.
And that patience, but you do want to gut them right away.
Yeah, and there is one really interesting little tool that they make called a billy club, mm-hmm. you know, which every fisherman used to carry at one point, and we've stopped doing that for some reason. But if you're going to be keeping sharks, then it's a great tool to have because you just thump that fish upside the head, and now he's not going to react the way that he was going to react before.
Right.
So when you're gutting them, their skin is really tough, sandpapery. It's going to dull your knife. So what I recommend is going in through the vent and zipping that fish up. You're just opening up the outside layer. You're not gutting him all the way through. In other words, don't use an 8-inch knife. Stab it into the vent all the way down to the hilt and bring it back up to the throat. You know, something short. You're just trying to open up the fish's body cavity so you can remove the guts. But you need to get those out of there if that fish is going to be edible.
And well, another...
I was going to say one of the best tools for gutting a shark, I always thought, was the one that you would use to gut a white-tailed deer. It's got a curved shape to it, so it only goes in as far as you need it to go in, and it's super sharp, and you just pull it.
Yeah, if you have a blade that's got a gut hook on it, that's perfect.
Yeah, it works. It works really well for dealing with a shark.
Yeah, and I can see that absolutely. Now, the other thing when you are keeping a shark is there's two fairly important things. Is number one, make sure that your cooler will fit that shark. You know, a lot of people have way too small of a cooler. And, you know, the Game and Fish requires that the animal has to remain in whole condition, which gutting it is legal.
Gutting it, removing the gills.
Gutting it and removing the gills is legal, but everything else has to be intact. So let's say that shark's 6 inches too long. You can't legally cut his tail section off to get him to fit inside that cooler. So be very, very careful with what you keep.
Now, what you can do is you can fold him around. There's no rule that says that you can't bend him real hard or fold him if he needs to be folded to fit into the cooler. But the bigger the cooler you have, the easier it's going to be. And once you've got that fish gutted, go ahead and if you've got slush, put him down in the slush. If you don't have slush, then pack the body cavity with ice as well. You want to get that meat cooled down as quick as possible.
Right. Now, what about identifying some of these sharks? Because that by far is
that's going to be the real
number
trick.
One trickiest thing there is. You know, people, you know, I've seen hundreds and hundreds of pictures of sharks. I've handled hundreds. Some of them are a little tricky at first.
Yeah, well, all of them are a little tricky at first, which is why, for a lot of people, there's only two kinds of sharks here. There's hammerhead sharks and there's sand sharks. That's it. That's all they know. So,
and a sand shark doesn't exist anywhere.
No, there's no such thing as a sand shark. But a sand shark is any shark that you can't identify, apparently.
Yeah, generic term.
And the other thing is, you know, I get photos all the time, again, sent to the magazine of people with their quote-unquote black tip sharks, and a lot of them are baby bull sharks because baby bull sharks have black tips on the pectoral fins, the paired fins next to the gills. Those are the pectoral fins. So don't assume that just because, oh, it's got black tips on the fins, it must be a black tip shark. You know, there's three species here that you are fairly likely to catch that have black tips on their fins. There's the black tip shark, which is the one that you can legally keep at any size.
Yep.
And then there's the spinner shark and the bull shark, which have to be 54 inches to the fork for you to legally keep, which 54 inches to the fork is a fish that most people are going to be identifying as about 6 feet long when they see it, which is far larger than most of you want to keep because that's not going to fit in your cooler, is it? So you need to have at least some idea of how to identify your shark. My top two choices for people bringing sharks home for the table are actually sharp-nosed sharks and black-nosed sharks because those two fish are probably the easiest to get a positive identification on. With a black-nosed shark, they don't really have any markings on the body anyplace. It's a very plain tan to grayish-brown shark, and there's not a whole lot that you're going to notice on it, except underneath the snout, it has like a charcoal smudge, almost like it had a little Charlie Chaplin mustache tattoo at one point that's gotten real faded. Yeah. So that makes for a definite positive ID on that black-nosed shark. And there's no minimum size on those. They're a great table shark.
Absolutely. You know, and then you've got the Atlantic sharp nose, which looks very, very similar. You know, very long, streamlined, skinny little fish. You know, probably for me personally, the majority, and this doesn't hold true with every one of them, but identifying them, one of the easiest ways, they've usually got a couple of little bleach spots somewhere on their side of their body. You know, and like I said, it's not 100%, but it's a 98% for me.
Right. Well, and the easy thing is, if you can't definitely positively ID it, you let that fish go.
Right.
I mean, especially when we're out there right now, it's not like this is the only shark you're going to catch. You know, right. If you're in an area where there's sharks are abundant, which is pretty much wherever right now, and if you're chumming, which you should be chumming if you want to catch bunches of sharks, you're probably going to have the opportunity to do this somewhere between 6 and 30 times today. So you don't need to keep a fish that is of questionable identification. Let those fish go. Keep the one that you know is legal. And remember, your bag limit is one per person, but it's a maximum of two per boat. So if there's six of you out there fishing, you cannot keep six sharks on your boat. You can only keep two. So just, you know, stay within the law. It's pretty easy if you think about it for a second, and have a good time.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and we talked about it, you know, there's no real heavy tackle requirements for them or anything like that. Small little 18-inch pre-made steel leader like what AFW makes, and then Eagle Claw also makes one that's not too bad. Or you can make your own little shark leader. You know, it's pretty simple, and you don't really need any heavy tackle. You know, your snook redfish tackle, pardon me, or your tarpon gear. You know, both those are way more than adequate for most of those sharks that you're going to get into and fight. So makes it a little bit more fun, which is what you're supposed to do on the weekend.
Absolutely. Hey, you want to talk about something completely different?
Sure.
How about bass fishing?
Bass fishing, yes.
You know, we talked about our rainy season picking up, and while it hasn't really fired up the way that it's going to here shortly, it's definitely been raining in some places.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we got here up here in Northport, and your swales and your little ditch out front is full of water, so you've been getting quite a bit of rain, and certain areas have gotten a torrential downpour. I mean, we got one at the shop that was probably 3 or 4 inches in a very short period of time because the inside of the shop started to flood, which almost never happens unless it's a deluge of inches in a short moment.
Now, you probably didn't have any bass biting in the shop.
No.
But the bass have been biting in other places. We've had walking catfish
back there in the parking lot, though.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you try to catch one on a bait?
No.
Come on.
No.
How cool would that be?
It would be kind of funny.
Fishing store where you catch fish right in the backyard?
Right.
Come on. So.
You know, but no, the bass have been moving around a lot, especially if you can find an area where you've got some moving water coming over some of those little spill dams or levees, or even some of the culvert pipes that are bubbling a little bit of water. Those would be by far the best places and best shots at getting a nice fish right now.
Yeah, and that's what that rain has been driving, although not everywhere. It's just been localized. The cool thing about that is that fish will come to those areas, especially early in the season when we haven't seen a lot of rain previously, because, you know, that's going to provide them a great source of food. It doesn't last forever. I mean, when we get into August and it's still raining like that and you still have spillways, well, the fish aren't quite as excited to be around those spillways because a lot of the terrestrial stuff that would have been washed in has long since been washed in and gone and eaten. But this time of year, when it's first starting to happen, those fish get really excited about it.
Absolutely. And, you know, shiners are by far your number one choice to use for a bait right now. But we've had a lot of bass guys in this last week that are buying all over the map. I mean, probably the number one main seller that's been going on right now has been your topwater frogs. You know, they're buying some of those. You know, the Strike King is one of them. I think it's, geez, I can't even think of the other couple, but any of your top water, basically weedless frogs have been working extremely well. And then they've also been buying a lot of the spider jigs and some of the soft plastics and just rigging them up weedless with a little bit of weight on them. So it tells me that they're in that weird pattern of let's just throw everything at them that we can and see what works.
Right. Yeah, and I like some of those baits, like a Zoom Horny Toad is a great choice because you can rig it to fish top water if they're on that top water bite, or you can just put a weight in front of it and rig it Texas style like you would for a bass worm, and you can fish it down a little bit deeper. It gives you a lot of opportunity to cover a big portion of the water column. Or you could be like RJ and get yourself a jitterbug and go out and just do that.
Yeah. Is that what you like?
I like fishing for bass on top water. There's just something exciting about a bass coming up on the top and nailing something. That's three quarters of the fishing experience, I think, is when that bass comes up and pops the top water lure.
Well,
I usually start out with a worm, though. You bounce a worm along the bottom a little bit, see what's going on, see if you get any luck with that, and then you move to top water.
So. I don't think pop is the right term for when a bass comes up and hits that top water bait. I mean, sometimes it's a little pop or just a little slurp, but usually it's more like a cannonball.
Yes,
out there,
exactly
just
right.
Boom!
It gets you to jump, and a lot of times you miss those fish on those topwater bites because your instinct is to automatically set the hook when that fish blows up, both by you accidentally jumping and pulling that out of their way, or just by setting the hook. But a lot of times, or most of the time, you need to get excited about that jump, but you need to wait until you feel a little bit of weight on that lure before you can actually set that hook on them.
I think one of the few times that I've really impressed Robert was when I was standing on his back dock and I was fishing a topwater bait and just walking the dog with a Zara Spook, and there were snook coming up and they were popping at it, but they were missing it. And Robert seemed impressed by the steely nerve that I had developed over many years of fishing topwater baits to not react to it at all until the thing actually was taken down and you felt that fish. So I don't get to impress Robert very often.
In my early years of fishing topwater, I've yanked many a lure way up into the air and up into the trees because I reacted to some pop around it or splash around it. So.
Oh, me too.
And sometimes into yourself.
That's right. Yeah, often into yourself. So it's something you'll learn. You know, it's like, even if you have to count. You know, you've got to hit, count to three or four before you make any kind of reaction.
Yeah,
which will help you with more hookups if you can do something like that.
And with bass, it's maybe not as bad because bass are really anatomically equipped to grab something off the surface of the water. So are snook. But with some species, like once you get into topwater fishing, you'll try topwater fishing for anything. And when you're topwater fishing for redfish, redfish are notorious for missing that bait sometimes half a dozen times before they're able to finally snag it. So if you're going to jerk it away from them every time, they're not going to be able to find it. You're going to miss every single fish. You get to see the explosion, which is cool, but, you know, hooking fish is nice too.
Absolutely. No, it definitely makes it much, much more enjoyable. You know, you were talking about the bluegill that you were catching also, or the sunfish. You know, that's another one that happens quite a bit around some of these little spillways and culvert pipes, too, because it's not only flushing out frogs and lizards and displacing some of the mainland animals, but it's also displacing a whole lot of bugs and washing them into the water. So the bluegill bite starts to get kind of ridiculous in some of those same areas.
And those are not bad-eating fish at all, is bluegill and pumpkin seed and I guess what they call them, shell crackers down here.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we have no pumpkin seeds here, but we do have red ear sunfish, which are shell crackers. We got bluegills, we've got warmouth, and we've got stump knockers or spotted sunfish. Plus, of course, we have some of the fish that they don't get up north. We've got the Mayan cichlids, and we've got the tilapia. And depending on your methods, you may not be catching too many of the tilapia because they don't like a lot of the small artificials. But if you're fishing with a little beetle spin, for some reason they seem to like that beetle spin. I don't know why.
Yeah, and tilapia get fairly large. They've been pulling them out of the canals and around El Jobin in 24, 30 inches.
Oh, yeah,
fish.
3 to 5 pounders all day long. Yeah.
So it's definitely a cool fish to pull in.
And they're good eating.
They are, definitely.
It's another one that's a very good eating fish.
Yeah. Now, I always get some people who are surprised when we talk about tilapia that, number one, that it's a real fish because they've seen on the internet that tilapia aren't real fish, that it's some kind of crazy boneless, skinless thing that's grown in vats in China, which is completely not true. And the other thing is that they're surprised that we have them here. But we do, and we have them here in pretty good numbers. And you may sometimes hear them referred to as a different name. When I grew up, we never called them tilapia. We called them Nile perch.
Right. And that's the other common name for them worldwide is Nile perch.
Yeah.
Which is not the same animal, but the name works. So
the actual Nile perch is a totally other fish. In fact, I had to fight a guy on Facebook about that the other day.
Really?
Yeah. He was insistent, too.
What's up with that?
I had to show Google him. It. I showed him pictures of a real Nile perch, and he said, "Yep, that's it. That's what we've got right there in the Peace River." And I said, "No, no, it isn't.
No,
it's not even close."
And those tilapia Nile perch are an invasive species too, so there is no size limit on them. So if you really, really enjoy fish, you can keep as many of those as you want.
Yep. No size
they freeze
limits.
Well, too.
Yeah, you can a lot freeze, better than the mackerel.
You can freeze the fillets and keep them, and they also smoke really well, too. So it's a good all-purpose fish, and you don't have to go crazy with tackle or anything like that. You don't have to have a boat. All these little canals and small ponds, that's my mission lately. There's all these small ponds in the area, and I want to go investigate each one and see what's in there. Because I never see anybody fishing them along 776 and some of the side roads.
Right.
Now, that particular species, there's been a little bit of a rise in the interest in bow fishing for tilapia.
Yes.
And for a lot of fish, I'm not a huge fan of bow fishing because, you know, we see it for sheep's head. We see people who are out bow fishing for stingrays and cow nose rays in a lot of cases to use for shark bait, but in a lot of cases just for sport because they can shoot it. Don't like that. Don't like the idea of shooting fish that have size limits because it's very hard to gauge the size of something like that. But with a fish like tilapia, no size limit, no bag limit, doesn't belong here anyway. Go ahead. Shoot them up.
Yeah, I can see that. I just don't like the idea of wasting them either.
Well, no, of course not. Why would you? I mean, once you have that good-eating fish, why would you waste it? If you're doing that, you're kind of an idiot.
Yeah, I know. That's how some people are sometimes.
Okay, well, let me go on record as saying those people are idiots.
I like it.
Yeah, I'll vote for that, too.
You know, and you will catch some other weird fish in there sometimes. You know, over the years, I've had a couple of paku brought in.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest ones I ever saw was actually brought in from out in Rotunda. You know, and it was like an 18-pounder. It was a good size.
That's a big fish, yeah.
Big paku.
Yeah, don't expect to catch paku out there.
No,
but
it's not. Not a normal thing, but there's still a lot of weird critters around to be caught around here.
This is a subtropical place, and when people release aquarium fish, sometimes they survive for a lot longer than you'd think they would. So.
Yeah, that's why it's always a bad idea to do that.
Yeah. Let me go on record as saying those people are idiots, too. So, if it gets too big for you, just eat it.
Absolutely.
You all right over there, Robert?
No.
Yeah, this cough is going downhill pretty quick.
Cough is just making me crazy, and I feel bad and terrible.
If anybody would like to pray for Robert,
I'm screwing it up. For
please
Frank.
Go ahead.
I'm not doing a good enough job.
Put your hands on the radio.
Yeah, but no, we're going into all these different things with these different fish right now because a lot of these can be land-based fishing. You can also do boat-based fishing, but because it is a holiday weekend, there's a lot of opportunities there to spend it with your family or by yourself. But you've got a lot of different species to choose from and check in on. You know, it's amazing how people get upset when you have closed seasons, like them doing the snook, redfish, and trout closure. And it's not that people keep every fish that they catch. You know, it's the idea of being told no that aggravates them. But then also on the flip side of it, it aggravates them when they're out fishing, even though they're mostly catch and release, every now and then you foul hook one and you feel bad that you have to throw it back when otherwise it would have been in season, it would have been of legal size, and you could have kept it. I think that's the other part that bothers a lot of people when they have these closures. So having some of these other species around right now, like the shark or the Spanish or the freshwater fish, it allows you some different options for food, you know, and especially on a weekend where you get together with a lot of family, a lot of people do cookouts. This gives you another option.
Yeah, I'd much rather have fresh fish at one of those than have hot dogs.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Yeah. Seen how they make those things?
No, I haven't actually.
It's all snouts and buttholes.
I don't want to look at that. You know, another thing that's been going on out there in and around the harbor with these small sharks is they have been catching quite a few cobia the last several days.
Oh, the cobia are back in.
Well, I don't know if it's quite a few, but they are seeing some anyway. The thing about those fish is that they're targets of opportunity, and you may catch some while you're shark fishing. You may catch some while you're mackerel fishing. Hey, anytime you put a bait in the water, you don't know exactly what's going to come up and eat it. But a lot of times you'll see those cobia, and the key to that is being prepared to pitch something at that fish. So no matter what you're going out there to fish for, you need to be prepared for whatever swims by. And when I say prepared, I mean ready to pick up a rod, make a cast, and catch that fish. Not ready to pick up a rod, tie on a leader, tie on some kind of a bait, look around to see where the fish went, and oh crap, we lost him.
Right.
You've got to be ready right now.
And a lot of times when you're shark fishing or tarpon fishing, you're drifting around or trolling motoring around or even just flat out anchored. Two poles should always be sitting around. Well, one pole is going to be baited with a bait sitting in the back rod holder, literally 2 feet underneath the boat. And then the second rod should always be just sitting there with either a small lure like a bucktail with a worm on it, or just a plain bare hook, no weight, no nothing, just ready to grab a live bait or a dead bait, ready to pitch it out in front of a potential predator coming by that you want to target, most likely a cobia. You know, it gives you that option. And because we've been hearing more mixed reports of them, and this tide starting to switch around from that full moon tide into kind of the normal tides that we normally have, I guess would be the right way to put it. You know, you're starting to see some of these fish move into the harbor a little bit more. So it wouldn't surprise me to start to hear a few more reports of legal-sized cobia up at Eljo Beam, because this is a time of year where that usually starts to pick up in good numbers, and that for some reason they really like the mouth of that Myakka River for your cobia. So kind of take advantage of some of these options or opportunities that you have out there and play around with it, because I mean there's nothing more fun than having multiple subjects to fish for.
Right.
And keep family entertained at the same time.
Everything we've talked about today gives you those kinds of opportunities. You know, you're going out bass fishing, well, you also have the panfish available to you. You can do multiple different things while you're out there. You're going out after tarpon or sharks or mackerel, you know, doesn't matter. You're out there in that water where all these other things are happening. You know, be aware to it. Let the situation dictate what exactly you're going to do. You know, we may go out there and say, you know what, we're planning to go tarpon fishing, but hey, here's this huge school of Spanish mackerel over here. You know, why are we going to continue to try tarpon fishing when we have all this activity going on over here? You know, take advantage of whatever comes along, you know?
And great advice to be pre-rigged for a couple of different opportunities.
Definitely. Otherwise, you're going to miss out on them. Yep. And that story about that really cool fish that you caught out there is just going to be the story of what got away.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to have that happen. You know, and it's still, you know, maintaining the fun and the activity with everybody around you and being very careful, because we got a lot of boaters that are going to be out there this weekend. And the weather's going to be, it's supposed to be really a nice weekend, but the wind has not really subsided as much as
we
would like.
And we have a good
like
chance
to.
For some afternoon thunderstorms.
Yeah.
And if you're not experienced on the water, you need to stay relatively close to shore. This is also not the time of year to be out on the water doing maintenance on your boat.
No.
It should be maintained long before you get out there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you should be troubleshooting all that long before you get out to the boat ramp.
Right, and I'd say also keep an eye out for your fellow boaters, because there's going to be inexperienced people out there that are going to get into trouble.
Well, and there's also going to be a lot of people out there drinking. So.
Well, that's the other side of it, too. You know, we're going to speak out against doing that. The time to drink is when you get back home and you've got the fish on the barbecue.
Listen, you can drink all you want on the boat, but not if you're the guy at the helm.
That's right.
Exactly. You know, and that's the way it should be. You know, the jeez, my brain is so shot. I apologize. It's been one of
cough medicine.
Right. That's exactly it. So, either way, this is Robert.
And Josh.
Captain Josh Olive.
And RJ.
Captain RJ, the director and everything else. And
PhD.
You guys have a great, safe weekend. Thanks.
Fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.